pass the mic around so we can get into it.
Association of the Lake of Shivanti, Paruka, and Chintamani, which are all in Detroit, and seeing you, Mahaji, I know that all of you have a certain aura of like very, very peaceful and very compassionate towards living entities. Is that, you know, just an aspect of, you know, Srila Prabhupada, of what he actually touched in your heart, or, you know, I can't really explain the energy, you know, that I've got from all of you, you know, and I'm just thinking it's like the same thing from Lake, they're going to talk, they're going to go to the problems, it's like all this, so much love, you know, it's just like amazing.
Once I asked Prabhupada a similar question, and I said, Srila Prabhupada, I've seen a picture of you and your Guru Maharaj, and you're both in the exact same pose. And that pose was at a desk for Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada's arms on the desk, and they're writing on the desk and they're both looking up. Just, it wasn't a pose, but somebody caught them in the picture. I said, and I've seen you in this same pose, and you seem to reflect so much of the energy. I think I use the word aura. And Prabhupada said, he is the gold and I am the iron. and I would say that I'm not even on the metal scale. I mean, whatever you're seeing is simply an attempt to try to understand what the word compassion is. But certainly anyone who gives their life and soul to living Krishna consciousness and sharing it with others, naturally the compassion is part of their character. And the more they share, generally the more compassion you see exhibited in your nature. And I feel this very strongly with Srila Krishnapada here. You feel so much his compassion because he's there with you day by day, step by step. Even when he's not here physically, you feel his presence here. That's compassion. That's when you really, when a person has sacrificed everything and wants to share Krishna consciousness with a creature, when they realize the importance of distributing Krishna consciousness, and they're willing to take the responsibility of another person's spiritual life. And imagine compassion is involved in that. So there's many, many shades and meanings on what compassion means. But to me, that is the definition of compassion. That means complete selflessness. That they're really only interested in giving to others. And taking on so much responsibility. So many headaches. But that's all, they don't see it that way, they only see it. So that's compassion.
You can tell they're bought by Kripas, in the mercy of the spiritual master. The disciple is attentive to their guru, and the guru's blessings and the guru's energy comes. You can see sometimes they walk in, it's like, you know, by going to angels coming into the arena.
Hare Bol. Good morning. Welcome to you both.
They want to get you on video.
Yeah, I use an expression. We have many guests come through, and I use the expression, my cup runneth over, because for so many years I've been seeking with an empty cup and an empty plate, and through Krishna's mercy, through it all, he kept me to come where I can be filled and overflowing. And what came to me the other day with visitors coming through Krishna's mercy, it seems I'm going to have to get a bigger cup because so much is coming. And I'm so thankful for it all. And I was feeling all right just now until you spoke of the compassion of Srila Prabhupada and the compassion of Srila Krishnapada and the need an ability to obey the instructions of the spiritual master. That's something I've been trying to work towards, because he doesn't speak with a loud voice, and yet when he gives instructions, you really need to listen. So
I'm hearing. You speak pretty loud.
Yes. I'm just getting so much. And I did have a question, but as I said, I just got so full. And the energy, as you were describing how you were feeling that calm and that peace, and I love, I feel it every time we first met.
Yes, and the minute I saw you.
It was just so wonderful. And I'm praying that that can develop in me as I continue off to serve. But you mentioned about the walks with Srila Prabhupada, and you mentioned a waiting list. Mm-hmm. You know, we always see the pictures of all the devotees walking, and it was like, wow, how wonderful. But it sounds like there was more to it than just running out and falling in behind him.
Yes, that evolved over a period of time. Because when this Krishna consciousness movement started, I liken it to a family. Sometimes I make parallels in Prabhupada's lila to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Adi lila, the Madhya lila, and the Antya lila. And for me, the Adi lila was that likened for the period of 1966 to 1969, where there was a family, and this was just like the family in Navadvipa. And the basis of our activities were chanting, feasting, and dancing. And anyone who wanted Srila Prabhupada's association got it. Because it was small enough, our society was small enough. But then in 1970, it's for me like the beginning of the Madhyam period, where Lord Chaitanya then left Navadvipa and took sannyas and began inundating the planet with Krishna consciousness. That's when Srila Prabhupada on foot took his party to India and started to show them how to preach Krishna consciousness. You see, he was really the living example. 24 hours a day, he was giving us some little insights, tremendous insights into how this movement would go forward in the future. So whether you were in separation from Srila Prabhupada, I know Krishna Pant also felt this, because at this time his relationship with Prabhupada was so strong. He was very famous in our society. I knew of him by this reputation long before I ever had the chance to meet him, because he was out in the field as Prabhupada's generals on the field, preaching and distributing books. His distribution of books was very famous throughout our entire society in the 70s. And many of us knew of him simply because of the exchange with Srila Prabhupada from a distance. The words he would speak when he was on the roof in Bombay, he would speak about him as such. So at this time, Srila Prabhupada began to go on foot and show us how to preach Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. And that period went up until 1975, the end of 75, and at that time he started to pull into the Antya Lila, where he was actually preparing to leave his body. And that was somewhat like Lord Chaitanya in the last Lila of his life, where he surrounded himself with only a few of his chief whips. Prabhupada had more, because he kept a very close relationship with most of his governing body commissioner members, who were also at different times a secretary or a servant in this period, who would call for them. But at this time, he entered into another mood of preaching.
I don't know if that's him so much, though, as the society did.
Part the society and part
because there were so many disciples.
But even in the middle period, he, in Los Angeles, say in 1976, when I saw him last in this country, in the June of 76, Rameshwar Swami was then the president and the GBC for Los Angeles, and he used to have to make long lists of who would sit with Srila Prabhupada in the garden, or who would go for a walk with Srila Prabhupada. And sometimes a devotee would only see Srila Prabhupada once, perhaps, personally attend one of these functions once, because then not only all of Los Angeles, but all of Southern California and parts of people from all over the United States would come to take the opportunity to see Srila Prabhupada. So the ranks were tremendous. There were literally hundreds of people there who wanted to have Srila Prabhupada. So that's when I say that actually there were lists of people. I remember because at that time Dina and I went to visit Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles with our Didis who were on the altar. And one of the first things I did when I saw him, I knew it was going to be crowded. So I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, we've come to take your association during morning walks in the garden. So I got an immediate rank to get in on every session. And at every time I would grab as many people as I could with my hands and pull them in and put them in the garden instead of me sitting there, just so I could. Some people that maybe never were on the list, you know, some people that wanted so much to see Prabhupada, just take them and put them there. But so that's what I meant by that. The society became so big. So everybody started to have to taste what it was to serve in separation. The power of serving in separation, which now every one of us must do. You have to serve in separation of your guru sometimes, and we must serve in ours, and it's all preparation for tasting service, ultimately service and separation, which is something that goes all the way back to the pages of the Bhagavad Gita. It's a very important facet of understanding spiritual life, both presence and separation.
Wow, Hare Krishna, thank you for that, because I think that's what's happening to us here. I'm feeling it with Srila Krishnapada. A question that I want to ask the other Mataji, it's in the beginning when I first met Srila Krishnapada, there weren't that many of us here in D.C., and I was always sitting in the front row, if they know. But you mentioned that at some point on the walk, Mataji, you were left behind because you were pujari or you had something to do, so you couldn't go with him. I wanted to ask, what were your feelings in the beginning when you were left behind? Because I had those feelings after we began getting more people, and some would go with Srila Krishnapada. I remember one instance when he went to Georgia last year and I didn't go. I had to go through quite a growth period of how could they go without me. But I realized it was a part of the process of learning the separation, and that you have brought it up now, and we are preparing for that. After our meeting yesterday, Srila Krishnapada is beginning to prepare us for functioning in separation. As you mentioned, Srila Prabhupada was teaching you how to preach by going out, and Srila Krishnapada has been doing that with us as he goes out, and we go with him to different places to teach us. I mean, thank you for awakening and enlivening and clarifying what maybe I have been taking for granted with Srila Krishnapada. I want to ask in front of everybody, forgive any offenses or Krishnapada that I have made, not truly recognizing what a wonderful teacher you are. And just the question though, how did you feel in the beginning when they would go off and leave you behind? Because I need instructions on that.
Well, I think it's certainly individual. That Jamuna might have a different answer than I did for that, because a lot of my feelings were based on the nature of my entire relationship with Srila Prabhupada, which was something that I realized over the years that I had a lot to learn, you know, not just from this life, but from past lives, and a lot to learn about pride and envy and ego and all of these things that are great impediments on the path of Krishna consciousness. But in our process, the object and the goal is Dipuranga Bhakti. Dipuranga means worship and separation. And just as with Krishna, this is considered the highest expression of transcendental love. Similarly with Srila Prabhupada, he tried to express that to us as well, that we should learn
the joy and the wonder of appreciating him, loving him, and serving him in separation. But it was very difficult for us then, and it's still very difficult for me, because his personal presence was so resplendent with bhakti, and it was something that was there and visible and tangible at every moment. And sometimes it's difficult to experience that in separation. We have so many other obstacles and intangibles. But in my own case, I found that as the years have gone on, that all of those experiences, such as being left behind, or the difficulties that come from being a woman, that came from being a woman in our society, which sometimes precluded women from some things, that now, in retrospect, I learned a tremendous amount from those experiences internally. It was internal growth. And that's what the whole focus of our whole experience in Krishna consciousness really should be for, is the internal growth. To take every situation that you're in and grow from it. And I can give you one example of that and those feelings. I was left with one devotee boy, who's a Swami, Altakpar Swami. And all the other devotees went to the first Mayapur program.
74.
And we were left behind to do the deity worship and cooking the deity worship. And then Srila Prabhupada came not long after that. And so I was feeling very sad initially that I didn't get to go to Mayapur, even though I very much enjoyed the service that I rendered. And when Srila Prabhupada came back, I was a little bit, I had done this deity service there with beautiful deities. And in my heart, I had some little pride over how this I was dressing. Srila Prabhupada would go on his morning walk, and then he would come back, and the curtain would open, and he would look at the deity. And one day, I was not able to do the worship, so Tatpar stepped in. He's a young brahmachari. He stepped in and did the worship. And Tatpar was very humble and very sincere, but he hadn't the slightest inkling how to address the deity. And when the curtains opened, or when I saw them just before they were opening, things like Krishna's crown was on Radharani, Radharani's dress was on Krishna. They were, you know, when I looked, I was horrified. Oh, this is so incredible. And, you know, what's Srila Prabhupada going to do? And when Srila Prabhupada came and the curtains opened, every day that I had done the service, he never said a word when the curtain opened. Never said a word. But this one day, when the curtain opened, he said, oh, this is very nice. So I realized that it was totally on another platform. That it was instructive, so instructive to me, that Srila Prabhupada was looking for a humility and a service attitude. And that because of my pride, I had to learn from this. And unfortunately, many, many years before I could see that. But that's why I'm saying that a lot of times you may not understand what's happening when it's happening. Just like we're speaking of Srila Prabhupada and his compassion and mercy, but these were extremely difficult times as well in my own Krishna conscious life and for many of us, because there were many problems and, you know, difficulties and things weren't getting done and fighting was going on and there were so many things. But the wonder and the glory of this process of Krishna consciousness is that the growth is continuous and it's retrospective, and many years down the line you can learn a valuable lesson from something that happened years ago and you weren't able to put together what the real purpose of all this was. So in worship and separation, this is something that
I'm learning more and more as the years go on, that there is great opportunity for relishing our spiritual master, whether he's present with us, whether he's in Africa or in Europe, or whether he's gone back to the spiritual world, that it's all a condition of the heart. It's all the way that you make your heart, so that his presence is always there, whether he's physically here or not. And that's the trick.
Relationship of awe and reverence. If you ever lose awe and reverence as a disciple for your spiritual master, you're in the wrong place. If there's never awe, and if there's never reverence, you're in the wrong place. So no matter how intimate you may be allowed to be with your spiritual master, that those things are always there, therefore you're always safe. And it depends to the degree with which you explore those things. But if you explore them, you find that they're never ending. And they're ever fresh. And they're always pleasing. And that's the way it still is for me today. Even in this separation period that we're in. And I was actually telling just the other day the story when there was a day actually in my life where I came to realize that the intimacy that I had with my spiritual master, which started in 1966, mostly 67 was when it started, through 1970, there were almost no restrictions on that in terms of the male and female roles, which later were to become very much established in our society. And in 1970, I had the first inkling that I wasn't going to always have a great deal of access to Srila Prabhupada, more or less unlimited. And at that point, I asked him a question. I said, Srila Prabhupada, how much time did you actually have with your spiritual master? And immediately, before a breath went by. He said, since I met my spiritual master in 1922, I have never been away from him, not for one second. Mm. Mm. But what does that mean? Mm. This is my credo. This is our credo. That you may be with, from the day you walk in this door and you hear and you see and you feel, you begin to worship those lotus feet. Till the day you go to your grave, it will increase and sweeten, and you'll taste more and more and more what that means to be a servant of the spiritual master, and for the spiritual master to give you instructions. So we're exploring this on all levels, and now you have the great opulence of having his physical association on the planet, and one day you won't. But all this will be in preparation for that. And even now, he may be taking on so many more responsibilities that will carry him to other places physically much more than he is here now. So maybe you've had the best of times. Maybe you've had these years that you've had him now, maybe the good old days next year. Because he may be, you'll see. It's always evolving, but nonetheless, your relationship will do nothing but increase and intensify as long as you allow this own reverence to come into place. As far as going blank, that's something you're going to have to work on. But I would take advantage, do it this way. One thing that may help with that is just to treasure that moment, to not be fearful. Suppose you're an idiot that can't speak and you know, you're deaf and dumb and blind and lame and all kinds of things that we feel we are. Nonetheless, you just want to grab onto that moment. And so sometimes you want to allow spontaneity to come out just to taste, to take advantage and taste the presence of your spiritual master association. And so just try to let these things, all these inadequacies that you feel you have, we all have so many inadequacies. At the lotus feet of our spiritual master, we feel ourselves nothing. But nonetheless, just to take advantage of his presence, we want to be able to have a dialogue. And that dialogue, the quality of the outcome is determined by the quality of the dialogue. So the better we make our dialogue, the more you'll get out of it. That's association.
There's also another wonderful story that would help you see how to deal with that problem. And that was the story of one of the great acharyas in the line, Narottam Das Thakur. He's written all the wonderful songs that prayer that we sing. And his spiritual master was Lokanath Maharaj. And he went through great difficulties to get him as a spiritual master because Lokanath was very humble and he didn't want to take any disciples. But Narottam Das did many things. One thing that he did was that for 1 year he used to secretly come at night and clean the place where Lokanath passed through it and then steal off of it. And Lokanath found out after this long time he was doing this, and he was very pleased, and many other things happened. And finally took him as his disciple. And he found that in his speech, because Lokanath, because Narottam was so absorbed in a very deep, ecstatic love for Krishna, that many times thinking about Krishna or the pastimes of Krishna or thinking about the devotees, profuse tears would come from his eyes. And once in the presence of his spiritual master, this happened, the spiritual master was speaking and tears came. But he immediately checked tears and immediately pulled himself out of this place because he felt that they would interrupt his serving his spiritual master. That he couldn't see if his spiritual master wanted something, and so he stopped. So this is the same principle, even though it's on a different level, the principle's the same, that you can't let anything interrupt the service and the serving attitude. attitude towards your spiritual master. So if by being blank, as you call it, you're not able to take in instructions or embellishments or anything that your spiritual master is trying to tell you, then this could be an impediment. Or at the very least, it could not let you serve as nicely as you would like to. So you might look at it from that. Spiritual love, great spiritual
where everyone is seen as the family and every other person's service is significant. And their position is simply to take what nectar they can from each other. It's a wonderful, even if we can perceive what that composure is like, even if we can relish in others the qualities of being free from envy, then it helps us to want to achieve that, because it's such a wonderful state of being. It really truly is, and it's necessary. We will never become perfect in Krishna consciousness until this envy is gone from our heart. So it's a constant effort, constant work, and supplication and prayer, chanting.
Could you know Shana Maharaj?
Is it? When we have envy in devotional service, it's actually sabotage, because it's like someone is doing archic service nicely, someone is cooking nicely, someone is cleaning nicely. If you're envious of that person, then it's like you're saying, don't serve the Lord so wonderfully. Don't claim the facility to accommodate the Vaishnavas or guests. Don't cook so wonderfully for the assembly of the devotees. So that kind of mentality is actually violence. And it directly attacks the atmosphere of devotion. Individually, for that devotee, they're projecting that those thoughts on, and collectively in the atmosphere, which everyone has to experience. Collective consciousness of each community determines what people are subjected to and what they're stimulated by. So we can remind ourselves that when any traces of envy come up, they immediately, like a laundry draw, it says here in this area, every day there's some, police car, ambulance going. And you hear the siren. So a siren should go in our minds every time there's some reflection of envy. That this is the symptoms that's manifesting from the disease that I have that has been responsible for putting me in the material world. And this is some of the major stuff I have to deal with in order to come back to the land of love. So the enviousness is stemming from the kama, or the lust. And the prema is, of course, the love. But the kama is simply the perverted love. So we have to change that channel from the enviousness or studying situations for criticizing and to demise the individual. We have to literally go love finding in terms of trying to appreciate, because every devotee, how many faults one may have, has so many positive qualities. The fact that someone has made such a leap of faith to involve in such austerities of commitment, when the day-to-day normative schemes are so much based on the opposite of what we're doing. So we must always, not in an artificial way, but have genuine appreciation for one who is involving him or herself in the path of bhakti. When we have that appreciation, then we won't see enviousness coming up so much. And when it does, it'll stand out so strong in our consciousness, we immediately preach to ourselves to be able to remove it. So when it starts coming, we're going to see, oh, this is Krishna allowed me to see my disease so I can now administer some medication in order to work on that.
George.
Thank you. I'd like to say may God's light continue to shine to both of you young ladies. You mentioned that when you're walking in the garden, your husband was in the grass, was just taking pictures. That brings to mind the question of marriage. How did your marriage function in your praise as a spiritual leader? What were the principles and watermarks and criteria of that relationship as you worship the spiritual leader on your journey to the Supreme Being?
Well, personally, I think that the opulence of my marriage is that we were best friends. And that helps a lot. Because there's so many ways of trying to understand what love and lust are in Krishna consciousness. But to be close friends is a really nice thing. Because when you're close friends, then lust isn't involved in the relationship. So friend means something else, another platform. So there was a lot of respect in terms of our individual services to our. We had a collective service by being married, and that was to be, you know, live in harmony, but that isn't the goal, just to live in harmony. The goal is to explore deeply individually your relationship with Krishna through the transparent via media of your spiritual preceptor. So I think that for any marriage that really excels, there's a respect. So certainly each one of us has to find the processes for doing that. And that's as different as there are, you know, two people. But at least in my case, I think the strength was that we were friends. And that we try to give each other a lot of room in exploring our service to our spiritualness. That you didn't confine a person one way or another to a space and say, you've got to do it here, you've got to do it there. Because in the days that when I was married in Krishna consciousness, we really weren't householders. We didn't have houses. We were just almost like the brahmacharis or sannyasis. We always never knew where we were going to live the next week or month. And Prabhupada would put us in a place and I'd drop us in the middle of no place and then say, see what you can do in Krishna consciousness. So what a strain that puts on a marriage. I mean, if you're going to get into it, you can break a marriage apart. But because actually the principle of positive attachment to the positive form was there, we kept that formula very strongly in our spiritual life. To be have positive attachment to the positive form of the Lord. That's such a powerful little tool. That was one of the tools that we called on. And that means that in the most difficult circumstances, this is where you put your energy. Positive attachment to the positive form of the Lord. Then you can tolerate much more than you thought you could, number one. And, you know, and you're not in the I-me-my of day-to-day life. So spiritual life and married life means the same that it does for a brahmachari in some ways. We're all on the same path, but it's just that with one person, you're going to do it as a partner. But we all, whether it's brahmachari training, brahmacharini training, grihastha training, vanaprastha training, many of our varnas and ashrams, we actually have very similar goals. And in married life, you extend it to from one person and usually to your immediate nuclear family, and that's where you're really going to concentrate your energy. The processes are similar and the difficulties are similar. And then depending, like, the whole wonderful atmosphere, this is such, you'll look back on these days with great relish, because here in this temple you have an opportunity to explore these relationships through service. And it's through these kinds of relationships that you're going to have strength more in your married life. Because oftentimes between husband and wife it's very difficult to do. There's a clashing for many other reasons of vexation. But if we can learn to do it in the temple situation as a good training ground, then married life is much easier. I don't know if that answers directly your question, but at least in my case, that was how I got into the discussion.
We'd like to thank you for coming so much. thank you so much. You know, I was just thinking about when we would have the opportunity to have you here to serve you at the Institute. I remember when Adam opened the restaurant and he said, you know, Yamuna came by here and she sat down and had some lunch here. And I said, when is it? When are we going to have the opportunity for her to come to the Institute? The Hare Krishna Temple tape has touched so many who have come in contact with Krishna consciousness through the song, you know, Govinda Hare Krishna. It's a very, very nice song. And the first question I had is, do you have any tapes that are available so that the devotees can, you know, continue to hear your voice and chanting and offering your voice to Srila Prabhupada and to Krishna?
I generally tend to just hear frog in the well, you know, croaking in the dark. So I don't feel like that at all. The old days of that particular service. Of course, you know what can be done in a sound studio, magical things. So really, George Harrison's production was very, you know, was good on all the tapes. So I don't know about any tapes. But number two, you also feel so happy to be here, because before, we've been traveling for 6 months now, just returned back a couple weeks ago. And before I left, actually lived in Virginia, and I didn't know about this place. Talk about being covered. I mean, I just thought Potomac was around, and I really, Potomac not that long, but we feel now we have a place to send somebody for a wonderful conscious experience, because Washington really needed that before the Institute was here. Now it's here, and I feel very happy we can send from the many people that we meet in the right direction, as well as long as we're here, we're sitting in the plan that we do. Take years of associations
from. Yeah. And the next question I had was to Dina. Dina Charia?
Charia.
Please forgive me. You mentioned earlier about service and separation. And this particular topic is extremely timely. For the members of the Institute, because we know that Srila Krishnapad, we can't continue to tie him up in the Institute. He's going to be going out and seeking to bring back more souls to have association with Srila Prabhupada. Radhana Krishna. So, what I wanted to ask you was, you mentioned that through the years you have gotten more and more realizations about serving Srila Prabhupada and separation. And what I wanted to ask you was, what are some of the personal experiences that you have had that contribute to your increasing desire in serving Srila Prabhupada in separation?
I don't think I understood that.
What are some of the personal experiences that you may have had which increase your desire in serving Srila Prabhupada in separation?
And what are some of the main experiences that engenders or keeps you in the ability to search Srila Prabhupada in separation, you know, with enthusiasm?
Well, I've certainly been through many different phases of understanding, lack of understanding on this issue. But a lot of the way I feel now comes from, there's a friend of mine so poignantly stated one time of seeing things with an attitude of gratitude. Mm-hmm. And I really, for whether it's because I've had so many difficult experiences in my life, or whether Krishna just got tired of seeing me suffer. But however, by the grace of Krishna and Srila Prabhupada, it's come about. The last several years approached my whole life in that way. And I found in seeing Srila Prabhupada to try to absorb and reflect on constantly just something of the debt that I owe him. Just something of this debt that isn't paid back internally. That it's something that is always there, whether it's the here or in the spiritual world. My relationship is always with my spirit master, one of service, helping him, his service to Krishna, and whatever that may be. And I felt very strongly that if I would be able to learn and understand something of that debt, simply by seeing what my wretched condition would be had Prabhupada not come and given me access to Krishna consciousness, where I would be now and what miserable condition of life I would be, because I was already fed up in material life when I came to Krishna consciousness at 19. And then by him so selflessly giving this philosophy of Krishna consciousness and training us, and giving us an opportunity to again get back on the path back home, back to God. So there's always the tendency in anything that we do a lot in life for the disease of taking things for granted to come into that, whatever it may be. If you're married a long time, you tend to take your wife for granted. If you're at a job for a long time, that becomes mundane and repetitious, and you take that for granted. And similarly, if we approach our whole spiritual sojourn with material conditioning, then we can learn to take that for granted as well. And that's very dangerous for us on the path. So in our relationship of service to our spiritual master, we have to always reflect on the debt of gratitude that we have, the importance of always remaining faithful to the mission of the spiritual master. And at least in my own life, I can say that as I matured a little bit, and by saying that, I hasten to add that I have so far along to go on this process that I've barely begun to scrape the surface. But just in life, we mature as we get older. And I've come to realize that the importance of always appreciating this debt and always appreciating the mission of the spiritual master, and that I can best serve Krishna by serving the mission of my spiritual master. That is something I've come to more and more appreciate as I get older. And I think that's the way in which we can always remain faithful and vigilant to the process and this whole purpose of us serving. I don't know if that answers. In terms of experiences, I think it's just a fundamental appreciation of the duty and reflection on that.
Maybe we take about 2 or 3 more. I don't want to starve, I guess. We're hungry. We're eating. We're going to be silent for your voices. I understand. We're going to give you some down in your stomach also.
We've been
sent
on a humble basis
as monkeys.
Thank you for being here. I want to ask Yamuna, did you ever have a conflict with serving your husband as your first spiritual master, as it is written in the Vedic scriptures, and so how did you overcome it? I had another question.
Could you say one again?
Did you ever have a conflict?
A conflict?
Mm-hmm. Many conflicts, or did your husband ever have a conflict with him, as well with you at serving, seeing your husband as your first spiritual master to serve as well?
Well, I never experienced that. When we joined the society, he didn't take the position of being my first spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada's been my only spiritual master. Now, in the Vedic culture, of course, as the society is evolving and we're trying to understand what varnashram means, the relationship of husband and wife is evolving. But for both of us, Srila Prabhupada, the word spiritual master was only used with Srila Prabhupada. So I can't really answer your question in terms of me having a problem with it, because it never came up. That wasn't part of our marriage. We didn't even think of things like that. We were just running with tremendous enthusiasm and excitement and eagerness to Prabhupada's feet. And because we were both trotting in the same direction, we get along just fine. I mean, we get along just fine. And that's the way our early marriages were.
Now, of course, we're trying to conceive for Abbot's Head and put this foundation down. So now in the mixing of the first generation, the second generation, the third, and going into the fourth generation, now we're considering so much more what the ashram, grahastha ashram means, the ramifications, the parameters, the etiquettes. And perhaps there will become there will come a day where actually you walk in the door and when you're married, you'll see your husband as your first spiritual master. I don't just personally have seen that yet come into a context that is absolutely viable and have it be in harmony with the other. I think Maharaj would have to answer that question because he's much more in the pulse of today. If that is the training that is being disseminated now, I wouldn't know about that. I really am in the dark about that. From another age of dinosaurs, if you will. Perhaps you can answer that part and then you can continue.
Why don't you give me the second part and I'll answer that.
And I want to know primarily what is your service now?
Oh, goodness. Trying to understand what das, amidas means. That's my service. And I don't care what name, shape, or form it takes. Anywhere, for anyone. That's my service.
It's also very similar to what we're discussing yesterday. We're discussing that there's more the sociological aspect of Krishna consciousness, the Varnashrama, and then there's the Bhagavad Dhamma. Well, the Bhagavad Dhamma is emphasizing that we are a spiritual being, spiritual soul, we're a spirit soul, and there's no real serious distinction between children, man, women, etc. They were all servants of Krishna. And then there's the Varnashrama Dhamma that categorizes situations with the idea of coming to the platform of being free of all types of distinctions. So as Sri Prabhupada, being such a Nitya Siddha, he just gave us like topmost. And he discussed how that if he was literally on the planet longer, he would have established more of the Varnashram Dharma, the outreach to accommodate gradual love lifting and acceleration. So in more of the Varnashram, there is much more concentration in family life itself in terms of basically maintenance. But as we look more at the idea of preaching, then we consider marriage or single. We look only in terms of how can I preach and serve better. So if I can serve better in a marital relationship, then I enter into that relationship. If I can serve better single, then I honor such a relationship. And so the real emphasis is on how to serve, how to be able to glorify Krishna and such. Now, we have to look at two interesting factors. One factor is that when Srila Prabhupada was physically on the planet, we had one distinct spiritual master who was distinctly a spiritual entity far beyond our understanding, and was quite senior in spirituality, senior in terms of the body that he was using, etc. And so it was a lot easier for householders to just give everything because they could clearly see that Prabhupada had given everything. And there would be less what we call ego that could intervene. Now we have a phenomenon of ourselves being, you know, like deputies trying to act as spiritual masters, but basically being deputies trying to carry out the order of our spiritual master to do the necessary services. So we are like parents or mothers or fathers who are also like teenagers and are trying to mature while we're trying to take care of our children. It's like a mother who has a child and she's only 16 years old. And she's kind of a child herself, but she's growing while at the same time they're taking care of her child. Now, that brings various types of unfoldments, realizations, and also complications and mistakes in the growth process. It brings another situation that the spiritual master may be like physically the same age or even younger sometimes than the disciples. And because there is such a tendency that we look at the agents of God as their body, then there can be an element of incoherence. Once we explained to some of you that if you are married and the spiritual master is a woman, and if every day, practically, your husband is saying, oh, how wonderful it was the other day, Guru Mata said this and Guru Mata said this, oh, it's so wonderful, you'll see Guru Mata with a beautiful smile, oh, Guru Mata, she's just so wonderful. And you kind of see what sometimes men have to go through. And the Guru Mata's preacher said, oh, I'm coming, let me offer some incense to Guru Mata. You see the dynamics of the interplay of moods of mentality and how ego can intervene. And what to say of Guru Mata is kind of young, Guru Mata is sort of, you know, charismatic, and somehow the husband doesn't seem to be so tentative. You say, well, you want to go to the market? He says, okay, no problem, but I want to go and see if Guru Mata needs me to drive her someplace and I'll come back. So there has to be a necessary balance in taking care of all your responsibilities. And say that when you're married, that is your responsibility, and working together as a team in serving the spiritual master. And the more that you're able to keep focus as a team to do the service to the community, for Guru, for Krishna, then the less there is the, you know, the incoherence. So, as say in the case where the spiritual master is about the same age as the disciples, then if both parties are not moving together, then there can be some, you know, some disturbance in that way. Otherwise, we are literally all for Krishna, or for God. And we've been married, you know, this may sound a little harsh, but we've been married thousands and thousands of lifetimes. And we've had thousands and hundreds of thousands of children. And we have been the woman sometimes, we've been the man sometimes. And so now in this lifetime, we want to have whatever children we're having, whatever relationship, and whatever service we have, is that being the liberating service that gives us the ultimate service in our real home. So our environments that we preach and we move about collectively, associations is important, but in the final analysis, every single person is actually being judged by what he or she has done, based on the field of activities that was arranged by Krishna to see what each person is going to do. So Krishna consciousness is definitely a family situation, because it's about the ultimate family in the spiritual world. But all of our relationships should be based upon how we are coming together to help each other to become free, you know, of the imprisonment and of the illusions. But to deal with the fact that many complications are there, and to honestly talk about them to be able to work through them. So we are in denial, there'll be so much undercurrent, and the relationship will be very, very shaky. And later it'll just be cosmetic or superficial. But to bring up the things and discuss honestly amongst the team, because it means teamship. But always keeping in mind what you're really about. You're really about trying to serve God, serve Krishna. And that must always be the priority. And so the discussions and the complications can help the relationship to be even stronger, because it can help you to see where you need to make certain inputs or certain adjustments so that there's more clarity of how to serve Krishna. If it's not so clear about how to serve Krishna, then there's no question, there will be complications. And more complications. And Krishna will even arrange complications to help you to see what you have to deal with. But if there's not, again, a serious enough desire to deal with them, then those complications will give you an excuse to walk into Maya in various ways. Let us take the two of you, and then we'll stop. So that when they come back next time, they won't think, well, we're going to be there too long. We'll take the rest of it when they come back the next time.
I feel honored to be able to ask this question. Haribo, thank you very much for the presentation. They have been very empowering in a spiritual sense. I have been deeply moved to myself, and I can feel it all around me. So it has, your presentations are spiritually empowering. I have three questions.
Well,
they're short.
Why don't you ask the most important ones?
The first one is to Yamunda. Why were you chosen to be a Srila Prabhupada's personal servant? And could you also please comment on the type of massage you received? Because today, there are many different types of massages. Mm-hmm. The second question is...
Can I answer the first one first?
Sure.
I think that I've contemplated on both of those questions a lot, and I've asked everybody who has ever given proper massage, how they were trained to give massage. So usually it was by a chain of command that Srila Prabhupada would give instructions to someone how to give a massage, and then once they purportedly knew what to do, and a new person was called in, he would give 2 or 3 minutes of instruction. This wasn't a 9-month course, but or 10 minutes of instruction, whatever it might have been. And in that short period of time, you were to learn what had to be done, and then you prayed. You prayed very intently as you put your hands on your spiritual master's body and tried very hard to give massage. So Srila Prabhupada gave, as he did with many of his instructions, whether it was cooking or cleaning or deity worship, he wasn't very verbose. He didn't give intricate, difficult instructions, just very simple ones. So generally, Srila Prabhupada wanted a very vigorous massage, and he wanted somebody who was very strong to give him massage. Because although his body was very delicate and small, in order to do what Srila Prabhupada did, we know of his inconceivable spiritual strength. And he wanted those muscles moving. You know, he would say, harder, harder. And some of the men that were, you know, 6'2 and 200 plus pounds, that really laid into him, he'd go harder, harder. So that was one thing. Prabhupada wanted a very deep, you know, he wanted a very deep massage. And in terms of my inadequate personal service, sometimes I think Srila Prabhupada just looked at Krishna put in front of him and then just picked who would do the best, who would do here, 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 here. And I was just maybe one of the lucky souls that he said, you do this. It wasn't because of anything other than that. I just was in the right place at the right time. I felt that. That's the first part.
Thank you. Number two, I'm aware that of the fact that there are hundreds of books written about Sri Prabhupada. You mentioned that there is an archives. Is anyone allowed to go into the archives and personally study and do research about Prabhupada? Is that permitted?
Oh, it's so permitted. If you have a computer, there is a program on the computer that is available to anyone who wants to buy it. And it has everything that Srila Prabhupada has ever written or spoken on the computer, so that you can call up a date, a time, a place, a name, an activity, a philosophy, a subject, any kind, and just type it in on the screen, and everything that's ever been referred to on that subject matter will come up on the screen, and you can read it. So the benefits of having collected and preserved Srila Prabhupada's words are now accessible for all of us who want to read. And just this year, I got this program. And it is called, what is it? The Folio. And if you're interested, you can find out where to order the folio. Now the archives is in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. Ooh. And anyone who wants this program can get it. Maybe you can collectively get it for your temple and put it on a
computer where it can be like your own library here. So in this way, especially when you're traveling, I've got a little piece of my writing. I got a little tiny, powerful laptop computer and folios on it. So I can be in the most remote place or on a train in the middle of India and pull it up and study all of Prabhupada's books or his conversations or his tapes. So yes, that is accessible for anyone who wants it.
And we have it upstairs if somebody wants to borrow it from time to time. But it's good if you get it on your own computer.
Yes.
Number three, this question is to either of you. Can you impart any wisdom regarding the raising of children today based upon your experiences? Thank you.
I think the most important instruction that I can ever remember. The most important instruction that I remember Srila Prabhupada giving to me on the subject of child rearing was that in the early days when we started the Dallas school, I believe that our mistake was that we didn't understand how to apply discipline to the children with the requisite amount of love and understanding that's needed, is very strongly needed as part of the equation if you're trying to instill any discipline at all on children. And I wrote to Srila Prabhupada about this issue, and Srila Prabhupada wrote back and he said, the secret in raising children is that you have to make this Krishna consciousness a joyful experience for them. You have to train them in such a way that discipline is there, but that they accept and not reject the process. There has to be love and discipline, but the love and understanding part is central to the process. It's whereby we engage the children from the time of birth in activities that will enhance the joy that they feel. Children naturally feel joy at being children coming into this world. And in Krishna consciousness, it's so natural for children. I'm sure you've seen with the children that you have here. This process is so natural for children to engage in because we're all about singing and dancing and chanting, and children just take to it naturally. It's so natural. And if we can somehow in our children's life always make the process vibrant and enthusing and joyful for them, then what discipline we have to instill, they will accept it with everything else. So there's an art to that.
Can we let Marilyn get yourself from this stuff?
Thank you very much for being here. In a sense, your presence has answered my question more than maybe words, I don't know. But as a newcomer to Krishna consciousness, I, and I know some others too, but just speaking for myself, have questions about being in a woman's body and the experiences of being a woman in Krishna consciousness. And so I just ask you, humbly in any way that you can, to share any of your experiences, because that would be very helpful to me personally, to see how the growth has come and what the learnings are.
That's just such a gigantic question. I don't know where to start on that one.
You better write a book on that one.
That's just gigantic. If you have any specific questions, perhaps, because again, on a transcendental platform, every stripped soul has to struggle in this material world. And whether you struggle incarcerated in identifying with this or that, there's so many labels we can all, identifications we can all be incarcerated with. So I think that in pursuance of Krishna consciousness, perhaps the most important thing is to try to find out what it means to not be this body. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what it means to be spirit soul. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing when you walk in the door, one of the first precepts we learn. And as as I mentioned the other night, that just is constantly being revealed to me. What it means, and Srila Prabhupada was the first person that I had a deep and loving relationship with that didn't look on me as anything other than a spirit soul. And that was just astounding, to have a relationship where he really saw me as a spirit soul. And naturally there are certain etiquettes we all have. Vaishnava etiquette is like a garland of pearls that you wear. I mean, it's a beautiful ornament, Vaishnava etiquette. So we want to embrace that. And there's so many layers that you'll go through in the pursuance of finding out what it means to not be that body. But that is, I think, beginning and ending precept. And then to learn how to act in such a way that that you don't embarrass the spiritual master by your behavior. That you actually follow his instructions, embrace his instructions, whether you're in a man's body or a woman's body, or this body or that body. I mean, it's just too general a question to give specifics and answers, you know, and have it not be out of context for me.
Thank you very much for being at the Institute. Again, like all you boys have said, we are honored, we're blessed. And before I ask my two questions, I will pose a small request of both of you tomorrow again, if you could perhaps benedict us with your association at the restaurant at Govinda's. As you know, we'll resume our programs back at Govinda's tomorrow, Monday evening at 7 o'clock. And the Institute is by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, have generated an atmosphere where we bring together somehow Srila Prabhupada's dear servants to speak to all the assembled devotees that come, and also so many guests. So, as you know, the restaurant hasn't been operating for a little while because of the problems that due to root. But now the restaurant starts back again tomorrow evening, so perhaps if it's in your schedule, then perhaps both of you can come.
In charge of you.
Yes. Yes, thank you very much. Sure. This is where we can follow
there's
up
with
some of these
tomorrow?
Questions.
What time
it's at
7
o'clock.
7.
Okay. I have questions for both of you. One, Mother Jaruna, I know you have had tremendous prediction from Srila Prabhupada, and this is beyond even what I can possibly comprehend. And I just wonder, in the early days, as you were receiving this kind of benediction, how did you balance being able to be greeted for the mercy, greeted for the nectar, eager to serve, and at the same time maintain sensitivity and encouragement to the devotees that were coming, and perhaps the devotees that were in your midst that may have been a male body or whatever, that may not have been getting that kind of benediction? It just seemed sometimes like I know for you, it must have been something.
Well, I think the atmosphere in this early day was to share. Srila Prabhupada didn't belong to any of us. We just were so fortunate to have his association. And we were so eager to have his association. He was, there's one prayer, I'd like to be known, Thakur. Manasa Deo Deo. And one of the last verses of that prayer is the report of it is that father, mother, friend, son, lover, you are all in all to me. And that's the way Srila Prabhupada was for us. He was the center of our existence, just like when the question was asked about your spiritual master being your husband. It just wasn't. Srila Prabhupada was everything to us. And as you've read in Krishna book, that when Krishna was in the arena in Mathura, different people had different rasas with him in seeing him in different ways. So when Srila Prabhupada was in our midst, all of us saw him in little different ways, depending on what our rasa with him was. And we all relished so much sharing how we interplayed with Srila Prabhupada. So for those of us that may have had more or less of his association, it was always shared in such a way that those that may not have had the physical association, we all had it. We all had it. Maybe some had it at one given time, and some had it maybe at a longer given time. But whatever happened was for all of us to share. Srila Prabhupada's presence with us was something that each and every one of us relished every moment of every day. And when we, in those early days, when he left, we thought we would die. We thought when he walked out the door and flew off to go to another temple, we thought we would die out of separation from him. But amazingly, we didn't, and we had to tolerate it. I mean, it was so hard to have him go from our San Francisco temple the first time. I mean, the separation, actually, there's a picture of Prabhupada standing in front of a car at his last glance at the San Francisco temple. And I'll try to find that picture in a Vyasa Puja and give it and show it to you so you can see this feeling that Prabhupada had in separation from us. But nonetheless, he said that this coming and going with the spiritual master, I'm like a cow. I can give field and I can give milk in this field, and then I can go to the next field and give milk in this field. And it's a fact that actually in pure transcendental consciousness, whether Prabhupada was in another place, we actually learn to relish his presence with us. Just like Krishnapad, he will go. He will be traveling a lot because of his new responsibilities. But you just have to share amongst yourselves all those moments that you've had with him and use those as great strengths to continue on following his instructions and feeling his presence, just as if he's sitting here in the room. And you can ask him questions. And then you pray in separation to him, and he will reveal in your heart and give you the knowledge and the understanding and the strength to go on doing your service. So association with the spiritual master comes in so many ways. And for me, yes, it is inconceivable. As the years go on and the more I really seriously reflect, it is truly inconceivable, the association that all of us had. Freely he gave of himself. And I had a unique position. I'm really aware of that, even in comparison to Dina. But I never take it as me. I just take it as his inconceivable mercy, and I just want to share whatever I have with you. So it's for all of us. Mm-hmm. It's for all of us at all times, eternally.
Actually,
we can end on that question.
No, go for it, sorry.
This question was for the Divatara, and although I know that this is, you're very transcendental to this question, for my own benefit, because I'm such a neophyte, I felt the need to ask this question. As a renouncement and in one's body, although we know we don't relate to being in these bodies, but we relate to being renouncement, do you experience many challenges as you're trying to serve Sri Prabhupada?
Due to what?
Due to being renounced. Due to
not having
husband.
I had many problems in my path to Krishna consciousness, but that hasn't really been one of them. It's not something I've had too much difficulty grappling with. I've always looked at it that my internal problems with envy and fault finding and all the other needless things that seem to find refuge in my heart have been so great that I've really not been too bothered by external things. We all have different things that we have to conquer, and some are more predominant within us than others. And my problems have been, as I said, perhaps a little more subtle things than
I was married once, but it wasn't successful. And it was a long time ago. And it was enough to make me realize that it wasn't something that I really needed to do. It wasn't my goal that I particularly needed. But it really doesn't matter whether you're married or not married. You just have a little bit of flavor in your service that you render. That's what you need this spirit. You can get back to Godhead just as fast. And it all depends on the heart, working in the heart. So it really doesn't matter.
I want to thank them so much for sharing their love of Srila Prabhupada with us. We try to emphasize here about applied. We even call it the Institute of Applied Spiritual Technology, so that we can make Krishna consciousness vibrant and a cultural experience, rather than just seeing it in terms of philosophy or like religion. And to have such saints as yourself to be able to share, to receive from you, I think is quite an experience for us. I have one usual request, or two. First, that next time you're in the area, I'll let you stay with us. We have a guest room upstairs that's yours whenever you're in the area. And the other request at the end, if you could just chant for us just for a short time, Prabhupada's favorite song. We don't know it. It's a difficult song. But if you could just,
should we do responsive?
Yes. Well, we don't know it, but we'll just listen and appreciate it as you chant.
A little bit. Just if we hear it over and over again, it'll come, the melody, because it's a little unusual. But I don't know it at all quite hard if I have a song. We can just chant the beginning.
Okay.
You don't have some books either, so let's just chant. Okay. You do? You want to get some for everyone?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's 1-2-3 rhythm, and everybody
should clap. That's what
I want to do. So a little slowly.
Thank you. Okay.